We'll move now to appeal 25-3337, United States v. Eric Nunley. Mr. Shah, we'll begin with oral argument from you.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Ankur Shah on behalf of Eric Nunley. This case highlights the importance of protecting Rule 32.1. 32.1 represents an important due process standard that defendants are allowed to cross-examine witnesses unless the government can establish that interests of justice require otherwise. In this case, the government never explained its reasons for why it couldn't produce the witnesses here in this case. Specifically, in United States versus Jordan, this court articulated a specific balancing test that are duplicated in circuits all throughout the country that the district court must balance first the defendant's interest in cross-examining witnesses against the government's explanation for not producing the witnesses. Here in this case, the district court permitted essentially unlimited hearsay from the government through police reports, statements from the alleged victim, and medical records. The district court's explanation, which you can find on page 14 and page 21 of our appendix, basically does not consider at all the defendant's interest in cross-examining these witnesses. Specifically, it conflated the preponderance standard on revocation with the interest standard. Here, the district court said that reliability, corroboration, and credibility of the probation officer was sufficient as part of its balancing. However, that's not the test, and that's not what Jordan says. Jordan says that the balancing test must be explicit, and it must consider the defendant's interest here. At no point does the government articulate a reason for why it could not produce the witnesses here. And so the unlimited hearsay resulted in harmful error, prejudicial error. The government has now, on appeal, presented essentially three arguments. The first is that the grand jury would have grand jury secrecy would have resulted in the witness not being able to appear. Second, that her domestic violence status as a domestic violence victim would have prevented her appearance. And three, that the medical records were sufficient as non-hearsay.
Was any error here harmless?
Yes, Your Honor. We do not believe that it was harmless.
There's really no doubt what Judge Yandel would have done.
I certainly agree with that.
That's the problem. I mean, from a harmless error standpoint, if we send this back to Judge Yandel, I think I know what's going to happen. I mean, he had such a slew of, I don't know that I've seen a case like this with so many. He just violated every condition of supervised release repeatedly. And she said that, basically. I mean, she admonished him, and her words were pretty strong, despite the shooting evidence, cutting off the ankle monitor and on and on and on. She talked about he just couldn't. And, she was, the 24-month sentence was within the guidelines for all those other violations.
I think the key point, and I would refer this court to the Moslovac decision, where it specifically emphasized that even though if the guideline range is still the same, the court's emphasis upon that domestic violence incident in Moslovac encouraged the court to sentence the way that it did. And so what we cited in our brief is that the court's reliance upon the more troubling nature, I think the court used, of the shooting incident, that affected the sentencing on this case. And specifically, Judge Yandel said that if I could sentence you more, I would have. I think certainly the shooting incident and the hearsay here in this case did affect how the court sentenced it.
And now how is that, though? Let's drill down. If there are these many violations, and we know that what the sentence ultimately was, notwithstanding the guidelines above that, can't it be disaggregated, all these other violations, from a hearsay problem, such that if the hearsay problem existed, it'd still be a sentence within the appropriate range, given what had either been admitted or found?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think it's speculative for this court to say that. I think that the district court needs to do that in the first instance. And that, again, is where, and so a case where it was found harmless error is this Mosley case. But it's not that in Mosley, the officer testified there. And in that case, you were able to independently ascertain that violation for what was the error, the violation of the supervised release. That doesn't exist here, because if the hearsay goes away, if it's error to admit all this hearsay, then the A-grade violation wouldn't be there. So then you would have B and C violations. And so
isn't that sufficient for 24 months?
It certainly is, and the court has the discretion, even on a C violation, to go up to 24 months, the statutory range. But I don't think that, I think, again, it's speculative for the court, for this court, to say, well, it would have sentenced otherwise to the statutory max or whatever. And I think that the Moslevac decision in particular is helpful on that point. And also in Jordan, too, this court reversed for a new balancing test.
By the way, what's the status of the shooting investigation?
Your Honor, they have indicted him on a new case.
In federal court or
correct,
state
Your Honor.
Court?
Correct, Your Honor. Okay. Yes. Yes.
He hasn't been charged by the state, though, with attempted murder or anything like that.
He may have, Your Honor. I would have to double check that. I believe there may be a case, although I would have to
look
curious.
Into
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're pressing you, Mr. Shaw, on line drawing. If there's not a natural perforation in the evidence between the B, C, and A violations, is it your request that the district judge give some kind of a Cunningham statement to the effect of, well, I would have given this sentence regardless, even if the hearsay was not included?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that the district court said that.
No, I'm not saying they did. Is that your request of us?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that the district court needs to, first of all, make the balancing test and comply with the rule in Jordan. I think that needs to be the first thing that occurs here. There needs to be, whether it's good cause or not, and if it's not good cause to not have these witnesses appear, then the court needs to so find and make explicit findings on that point. In terms of sentencing, Mr. Nunley, it would be our position that the district court needs to evaluate it based upon everything that it has. Now, if the government still does not want to produce its witnesses, then there would only be B and C violations, in which case then that whole conversation about the more troubling nature of this shooting incident goes away. And so the district court would then be limited to those B and C violations. I don't expect that to be the case here, but that certainly is a possibility, and that's for the district court to decide in the first instance. So,
thank you, Mr. Shaw. Would you like to reserve the remainder of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll now move to argument on behalf of the appellee, Ms. Hudson.
May it please the court. The district court here did not abuse its discretion in admitting hearsay and non-hearsay statements into evidence at the supervised release hearing. I draw the court's attention to the first claimed document that the defendant asserts is hearsay. The medical records, government's exhibits 1 and 2, are not hearsay. They were properly admitted without the Jordan balancing test.
What about the statements within the medical records?
Your Honor, the statements made for the purpose of obtaining medical treatment.
Who cares who shot her? I mean, you know what I mean? Why would a doctor care who, I mean, you got shot in the arm. Why does a doctor care who did it?
You're correct. And I believe under this court's precedence, those discrete statements identifying the shooter would be hearsay, but the medical records themselves are not. And they do show treatment for the female victim for 8 gunshot wounds and the male victim for 1. And if the court considers the rest of the evidence that the district court admitted without objection and are not before the court for appeal, the district court heard evidence that Mr. Nunley and his paramour were in a tumultuous relationship. They shared a child. The relationship was so tumultuous that when U.S. probation was considering allowing them to move back in together, said no. So we know that in advance. Then we know from the probation officer, without objection, that the defendant was the subject of a shooting investigation by Illinois State Police. And without objection, the probation officer obtained the police reports, learned that the victims were shot multiple times, drove themselves to the hospital, and the hospital records confirm that. So without
But I'm not sure the judge would have drawn the whodunit conclusion. I have a question for you, Ms. Sure. Hudson. This is a practical question that maybe you're not going to be comfortable answering. Why not just concede error? I don't know what we're doing here. I mean, this is a close case on the point that you're making. This really doesn't fit into our harmlessness precedent here. There's no doubt what Judge Yandel would do, both on the interest of justice finding, okay? I mean, I don't think she's going to haul this woman into court and make her testify in live proceeding in a supervised release revocation hearing. I don't even know that you need it, because I think Judge Yandel would give him 24 months on the whole slew of violations that she identified in the record.
Your Honor, I agree with you that the error here is harmless. And I would assert to the court that this court's precedent...
But what if we wrote an opinion that says it wasn't? What good does that do the government?
I believe the court, in questioning appellant's counsel, indicated that a Cunningham opinion might be sought, where the court would simply clarify that 24 months would have been the sentence otherwise.
But what if we don't?
You're
asking us to decide a case that I suppose maybe doesn't need to be decided. Because he's not going anywhere. He's locked up, right?
He is, yes. That's correct.
If Judge Yandel just did another 45-minute hearing, she'd give him 24 months, and I don't know what I'm missing. Am I missing something here?
No, Your Honor. I agree with you completely. However, I would assert that the Mosley opinion does say that this court would then correctly consider the balancing factors if the district court improperly makes that consideration.
Ms. Hudson, I have the same concern. I'm going to come at it from a different perspective. I don't understand why the government is fighting Rule 32.1 to the degree that it is. The whole grand jury secrecy stuff makes no sense to me at all. Okay, and you can disagree and tell me it should make sense. It doesn't make any sense to me in this context. And if I understand the fact pattern right, at the time of the August 2025 shooting, the defendant himself had a passenger in his own car, correct?
Yes, he did.
And that passenger's identity is known, not unknown.
That's correct.
Okay. And there were people in the back seat of Ms. Williams' car.
Correct.
And their identity is known.
That's correct.
So what is a total mystery to me is why the government just doesn't call one of them and get the kind of whodunit point that Judge Kirsch is focused on into the supervised revocation release record and deal with 32.1 and the procedural protection that 32.1 is affording a defendant. I don't understand that.
Very practically, the grand jury investigation was ongoing at the time. The defendant.
What does that have to do with anything?
Because I would have to turn over their statements that they made before the grand jury, identify them as witnesses in the grand jury, turn over their statements before the grand jury rendered their decision. This is an
So you say you would have to, and implicit in that is you would prefer not to.
Correct.
But how does your preference not to address the due process protection that 32.1 is intending to afford defendants?
I respectfully submit that these are competing constitutional issues, and that this was our explanation to the district court as to why they were not there. I made that statement to the district court at the outset. If the court does not agree that that is a viable option in weighing the
factors. If there's nothing remotely, I mean, I don't know why you can't move in limine in front of the district court judge to say we don't want to reveal the grand jury investigation, we want to comply with 32.1. You can inspect the grand jury testimony in camera. There's nothing remotely exculpatory about it. It just seems to me that when I read this, I thought, I have no idea why the government is so opposed to 32.1 applying here. Because you're loaded with people.
Right.
There's to call Ms. Williams. I get that. But what about all these other people?
For the same reason, Your Honor, there was a grand jury investigation ongoing. I understand the court's shaking its head.
I don't understand. I mean, I understand. That really surprised. I mean, there are courts. this is not Sixth Amendment confrontation clause. I will grant you that. Okay. But there are increasing numbers of courts out there that are saying, correctly, in my view, that the protection afforded under 32.1 is serious because it leads to the deprivation of liberty. And so the ability, as the rule says, to question adverse witnesses when you're talking of, you know, not all those cases will get indicted. A lot of them will, but not all of them will. I mean, you're talking about something pretty serious. I mean, somebody like Mr. Nunley is going to spend 24 more months in prison.
Correct.
And you're not bringing forth a witness. And
correct.
You got a whole bench of them.
Correct. I can only repeat myself, and I can only then say that if this court does properly weigh the Jordan factors, we respectfully submit that the court would conclude that the interest of justice mitigate against bringing these witnesses before the court. We would also suggest to the court.
So is that saying you want us to decide that question instead of accepting Judge Kirsch's invitation to say, why don't you focus on the fact that he cut off the ankle bracelet? Cutting off the ankle bracelet when you're on supervised release is a big deal, not a little deal.
I agree, and that is part of the brief, and we are resting our argument that harmless error exists here because of that, because we are looking at a 24-month sentence. The court could not go beyond that, and if the court simply does divorce any of the...
I mean, you also have a record, unless I misread it, where Judge Yandel was bothered by the fact that he cut the bracelet off.
Yes, and I brought that up in my brief. I cited to the specific words the judge used. I tried to distinguish this from the, I apologize, I'm going to mispronounce the case, the Milosevic case that right. Counsel brought up, that here we have a very robust finding by Judge Yandel as to the reasons why she sentenced this defendant to 24 months. She did emphasize that he repeatedly violated supervised release. We have 2 pages worth of violations that the court can see in the findings of fact and the order of the judgment. This is not an issue where the defendant wasn't going to serve 24 months, in my opinion. And I would ask the court to find any error harmless for any number of reasons, the least of which is the defendant did cut off his ankle monitor and 24 months is an appropriate sentence.
Ms. Hudson, I do have one thing to add. My point is on the interest of justifying. I agree with you. I mean, I think that there's a lot of really strong reasons that Judge Yandel could find in the interest of justice that the victim need not testify and that she could rely on the hearsay. But she didn't do that. And we don't do that as in the first instance. And I think that may be the issue. I think there are several ways in which this defendant is going to get 24 months. But I don't know. I mean, you're rolling the dice asking us to decide this case, which may not be in the government's best interest. I mean, you know, in a case with overwhelming, I think I know what the result is going to be.
I mean, sometimes here we're saying, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. And
I mean, 32.1, I'll tell you right now, I think 32.1 is serious.
I respectfully agree, but I do ask the court to look at the fact that we are looking at 24 months. He did cut his ankle bracelet off. He could not go above that for the sentence that would have been had for the A violation. So this case is distinguishable from the other case defense counsel asked, and I see my time is up, and I would respectfully ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hudson. Mr. Shaw, we'll go back to you now for rebuttal argument.
Your Honor, in terms of the amount of time that Mr. Nunley has served and may serve even on remand, I would point this court to Judge Ho's concurrence in the Kersey opinion out of the Fifth Circuit. In that case, the defendant was almost at the term or at the completion of his sentence, and the court still remanded on a 32.1 violation and said in its order that a new supervised release hearing needed to be held within 21 days. That's essentially the position that we have here. The seriousness, as we heard in questioning of the government, that 32.1 is not supposed to be taken lightly, and that these interests are very important. Mr. Nunley may have an opportunity at release if on remand, and so we would respectfully request that this court reverse.
Can you address one more time, Mr. Shaw? Can you address why? I mean, he's dealt you a hard hand on all these violations. There's no question. I mean, there's a whole ton of them, and a lot of them are committed, and then he cuts his bracelet off. And the district court, I mean, just read the transcript, and you know this. I mean, you acknowledge it. The district court said, I'm troubled by this. He cuts the bracelet off after a whole bunch of these violations. So he doesn't want to be supervised. He's trying, you know, to escape. I don't know about escape. But he's trying to avoid any kind of supervision while he's violating the law repeatedly.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that those are considerations to be made by the district court, not by this court. Certainly the court has discretion. We asked for a year and a day sentence. The government asked for 24 months. But the court emphasized, again, the more troubling nature of this shooting incident. And I think that's really the key point in combining this case with the Moslevac case, that even if the court, the guideline range may have been the same, it has to do with how the court views the error. And that's really the main point here. So I would again highlight that Moslevac case. I think that that's on point here.
Mr. Shaw, can I ask you a question here? How much longer do you know that he has to serve on this 24-month sentence, approximately?
Your Honor, I think he's done maybe a year, slightly less than a year.
Some significant time. And I assume he's been detained on the attempted murder or whatever the government is charged.
Yes, Your Honor, he is.
And is there a trial date set for that? Yeah.
There are trial dates. I expect there to be some continuances in that, potentially additional charges or some new discovery. Those are still pending. This case may take a little bit more time to work through.
The other one's a federal case. The criminal case that's pending is federal?
Correct, Your Honor, that is.
What's the charge?
Your Honor, it's interstate domestic violence.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks, Mr. Shaw. Thank you, Ms. Hudson. The case will be taken under advisement.